You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Reading with your kids.
Hola, ni hao, konnichiwa, assalamu alaikum, shalom, mahaba, moni muliwanji, namaste, jambo, bienvenidos. Hi, my name is Jed Lee, and this is the Reading With Your Kids podcast. We are coming to you from the beautiful neighborhood of Reedville in the southwest corner of Boston, Massachusetts. We are so, so very honored and so wicked happy that you're joining us in our mission to help families grow closer through reading. Please be sure to tell all of your family and friends, your kids' teachers and librarians all about the show. And please be sure to subscribe to the show on the iHeartRadio app, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Stitcher Radio, Ghana, Himalaya, wherever you find your podcast. Our guest today is Jennifer Friedman. She'll be telling us all about her wonderful middle grade novel, Toby's Tale. Before we invite Jennifer into the studio, we want to invite all the authors listening to the show to visit readingwithyourkids.com. Please click on the Authors Click Here button at the top of the page and scroll on down to our promotion program. We're really proud of this promotion program. It's a great way to let the world know all about your book through a number of very different mediums. If you participate in the program, your book will be celebrated with commercials here on the podcast, with messages to our 100,000-plus social media followers on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Also, we'll be displaying your book on our nationwide network of digital pedestrian billboards and have your book present in whatever live event we happen to be part of in a given month. We think the program is really helpful to authors. Authors do too. Siobhan Hong recently wrote, "I am delighted with the results I got from being part of the Reading With Your Kids promotion program. Played a big part in George J. and the Miserable Monday becoming the number one best-selling book in its category on Amazon." And Julie Whitney, the author of Astor the Lonely Airplane, wrote, "As a longtime PR professional, I am thrilled with the exposure I received from my rhyming children's picture book, Astor the Lonely Airplane." We would love to make the same happen for your book. Please visit readingwithyourkids.com and click on that Authors Click Here button at the top of the page and scroll on down to promotion program. You can also find out about our Certified Great Read program and find out how you can be a guest here on the podcast. Join us right now from the beautiful nation of Costa Rica. Our guest is here today to celebrate her middle grade novel. It's called Toby's Tale. Please welcome to the show, Jennifer Friedman. Hey, Jennifer, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me, Jen.
I'm excited to have you on. Jennifer and I were just chatting about her adopted homeland, Costa Rica. It's such a beautiful, beautiful country, and the people are really beautiful as well.
They are. I mean, Costa Rica regularly rates very much at the top or at the top of the happiness range of the happiness indexes. Mm-hmm. And the people are actually really nice. It's a nice country to be in. And it's obviously beautiful in terms of flora and fauna as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's a super place to visit. There's the ecology there to be one with nature. Is just really wonderful. The people are very welcoming to folks from the United States and from other countries. There's lots of folks who can speak English there. Yes. Although if you go somewhere, try to speak the language a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I've lived in a number of different countries and I've tried to learn all the languages of those countries. Yeah. And I'm every day working on my Spanish.
Yeah.
And it comes along and I get compliments from the locals. I think in part because so few Americans actually speak. So when you do speak, they're quite pleased with that. But I'm totally on the same page with you about that. Yeah. You need to learn the local languages.
Absolutely. Even if it's just hello, I'm sorry, I don't speak your language. Are you able to speak English? At least if you acknowledge the fact that you're in a different country, that you're not the one with the problem, people appreciate that, I think.
Absolutely. And where's the bathroom? Don't forget that one.
¿Dónde está el baño?
Exactly. Really good.
And that's much more. And isn't it really weird? Because I know in Spanish class, every Spanish class I've taken, they always taught you how to say, where's the embassy, before they teach you how to say, where's the bathroom? I've never needed to go to the embassy.
No. Let's get our priorities straight here. Bathrooms and restaurants long before embassies. Thank you very much. Yeah.
So let's talk about Toby's tale. Who are we going to meet in this middle grade novel?
Well, Toby is a schnauzer puppy, and he goes off on an adventure. He has to make a very difficult decision to leave his mother and sister. And he goes off on an adventure to find his forever home. Along the way, he meets an array of other dogs as well as some people, many good, one arch enemy who's not so good, but he meets a beagle named Sam, an Irish setter named Rosemary, a Pekingese named Feifei, who spouts Confucian sayings that help guide Toby. He meets a homeless man named Joe, who's basically his first human friend. So there's quite a cast of characters who he meets, some of whom will appear in Toby's Travels, which is the sequel I'm now working on.
Wow. That's really fun. So it sounds like Toby is meeting animals and friends from all over the world.
No, actually not all of Toby's Travels. I had to debate where he did the traveling, so that's going to actually be on Route 66 in the States. he does meet dogs of different – I mean, there's also, besides Feifei, the Pekingese, there's an English dog who speaks with a proper British accent.
Oh.
So he does meet dogs of other cultures, but he stays in the United States so far anyway.
the United States is – big enough to be 5 or 6 or 7 countries.
Yeah, that is true. It's very diverse with cultures. And that's part of what I am doing with Toby's Tales, is introducing children readers to people with different dogs with differences. I mean, that can translate to people with differences, different accents, different looks. Toby's Travels actually deals with one of the main characters is a deaf dog. And I'm dealing with bullying, dealing with all sorts of issues that are relevant to children, but also show differences in people/animals that I hope is educational and interesting for my readers.
Yeah. Well, I think so. And I was really, when looking on your website and reading your background, you've literally lived all over the world.
I've lived in a few different places, yeah. I wanted to be a foreign correspondent from age about 11, and I actually managed to do that, which I was very blessed to be able to have a lot of my career overseas and to travel and experience different cultures. I lived in the Middle East for a number of years, lived in Europe for about 30 years, and now a new part of the world, Costa Rica. I am fascinated by other cultures, different music, different foods, religions, history. I mean, there's a big world out there, and yeah, I want to see part of it. And like I said, I think if I, in my writing, can touch on those things, give my readers a taste of things that are different, I think that's valuable.
I agree with you. And I kind of go back and forth on this. There are some people who, like you, and to a lesser extent, like me, love other cultures and love meeting folks from other cultures and love experiencing different cultures and food and dance and music and playing with different languages. And there are other people who seem somewhat averse to it. Is it something that you think we learn? Do you think we have a natural curiosity, and then as we grow, we become afraid of different things? Or do you think it's something that we can learn to appreciate different cultures?
I think you can definitely learn to appreciate different cultures. And I think there's so many factors go into why a person might or might not be interested or might be scared of things that are different. I mean, and I don't know that that's a thing. I mean, I have three children and they met children of different colors, for example. That was no big deal. That mm-hmm. there was no concerns or skepticism or doubts. And I think as we read the news and we hear things and learn things and watch television, that we learn to be scared of things that are different. And I think we ought to really look at it the opposite way on how things that are different can enrich our lives and bring new perspectives. And my gosh, the different foods that I tried that I never would have tried if I hadn't lived in the Middle East, for example. I mean, where can you get goat in the States? And my daughter recently traveled to Peru and she ate alpaca. I just think that there's so much that other people can teach us, and we should be open to it. But I mean, I don't want to preach. Everybody makes their own choices on how they want to live. But I just think, especially for children, you can open their eyes to what is there, and then eventually they make their choices on go, stay, try, don't try. Mm-hmm. But at least to lay out the opportunity.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you. And by the way, if you're ever in Boston, I can take you to a place that serves some great goat.
I don't need meat anymore.
Oh, okay. Goat is one of those things, if it's prepared well, it's delicious. But if it's not, it's not.
I actually had it in Jordan and thought it was wonderful. And I ate pigeon in Egypt and just loved it. My eating habits have changed a little bit since, my youth.
Well, I do love having conversations about books that give kids a chance to think about exploring and getting out there. And exploring, I think a lot of times we think exploring and we think that's just we explore places. But I think we should also help our kids understand that they can also explore different cultures and different people in different situations, different sports, different activities. And that's such a great way to live a full and a rich life.
Yeah, I agree completely. I mean, books open up worlds. Even if you can't physically travel, you can reach places and enjoy them mm-hmm. vicariously. I mean, you can. And again, I just look at books as gives you a taste, and maybe you like that taste and you go on for a full course. I've always encouraged my children to read, and you develop not just other cultures, learning about other cultures, but you develop new interests. I mean, you may read something about somebody who plays the harp and that sounds really cool, and you decide you want to try the harp. But I just think it opens eyes and allows you to use your imagination. It teaches you vocabulary. I mean, it's just such a great, it's just a great path to so many things. Reading.
Yeah.
And parents reading with children and explaining and sharing some of that. And maybe some of those parents did that sort of travel, and that opens up a way for them to deal with it, to explain that to their children.
Mm-hmm. What a great conversation to have, especially with our middle school age kids, about travel and sharing some of your stories, sharing, when I was 20, I went and took my bike and rode it to Nova Scotia, and I had no money, but it was the best time. I met all these different people. Mm. And, just sharing those stories with our kids and then asking them where they would like to go, what kind of things that they would like to see in the world. It's just a wonderful conversation to have. And we should always be looking to have wonderful conversations with our kids.
I agree completely. One of the things I also did in Toby's Tales is, I mean, I've had dogs and cats for most of my life. All of my dogs are in that book. And it was really fun for me to sort of be able to relive bits and pieces of experiences and the joys I had with them and certain anecdotes. And I tell that to my children as well, that, I mean, they didn't know some of those dogs. Mm-hmm. But, it's been fun. And it, again, as you say, it's opened up conversation topics. I mean, one of the main reasons I actually wrote the book was because I thought this is the kind of book. My children were a little bit older by the time I actually got going with it. But this is the kind of book I would like to be able to read to my children. I would have loved to be able to read to my children, you know, sit down at night and when they were too young to read themselves. I mean, chapter books, this mm-hmm. book can last for quite a while.
Yeah.
And that was one of my inspirations for starting the book in the first place. And I hope that some parents out there actually see things the same way and say, hey, this is something I'm not just going to give to my child, but I'm going to sit down and read to my child and we'll share it together.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of parents who've actually said, this is a children's book for adults.
Yeah.
That they've gotten a lot of pleasure out of Toby's Tale. And that's very fulfilling for me.
Yeah. You know, we're always complaining. I hear parents complain all the time that they can't get their kids off their screens. A great way to get your kids off their screens is to read to them and in the course of reading to them, have conversations. If your kids are interested in some stranger doing something dumb on TikTok, they're going to be so much more interested learning the dumb things you did when you were a kid or learning the exciting things you did when you were a kid.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also, I mean, one of the things that I see Toby's Tales as an educational book. I mean, humorous, but it shares values and morals without being preachy. It shares fun facts about dogs. It deals with tough topics such as animal cruelty and homelessness, issues that are relevant today, and also important issues, bullying. That's going to be one of the main themes of, or a main theme of the sequel, Toby's Travels. Issues that are relevant to children and that allows openings for parents to discuss these important topics with children and educate them
yeah.
you know, in a fun way.
Yeah. We've talked a lot on the podcast about the fact that, you know, talking about these issues through a book is so much easier for you as a parent, so much easier for your kid. Instead of sitting down and saying, Jennifer, have you been bullied at school? It's, you know, because the answer you're going to get is, nope, no way. Everybody's nice to me. They love me. I have no problems at yeah. school. It's much easier to sit down and talk about, whoa, this character is getting bullied. And what do you think they should do? And how do you think they feel? And have you ever seen anything like this happen? Has, you know, any of your friends experienced this? And that's a much safer conversation for kids and families to have.
Yeah, I agree. And I think they're important conversations. And like you say, they open a book can open up, can make it easier for parents to address tough topics with their children.
Yeah. You said in Toby's Tales there's, you know, dealing with the issue of bullying and also animal cruelty. Can you tell us a little bit about that, those parts of the story?
The bullying will come in actually the sequel, but
okay.
the animal cruelty is actually a main theme in this. At one point, Toby, I mean, he's heading off trying to find his forever home. That's the overall theme of the book. Along the way, he ends up in an animal shelter, and there is an the person who's in charge of the animal shelter takes a big disliking to him. And this is actually based on a person I volunteered when I was in university. I volunteered at an animal shelter in Northern California and had a animal control officer who was a nasty piece of work.
Oof.
And so this is sort of geared on, based on this individual. But Toby struggles with him. I mean, he's treated badly for no reason, but and the animal control officer actually sicks his nasty dog on Toby. So, but the fun part, I mean, he spends quite a bit of time in the shelter. He gets a lot of support from two or three other dogs there, and that's trying to show the importance of sharing your pain, of finding support in friends, of persevering. But this animal control officer actually will reappear in the second book and probably the third. I haven't quite decided that yet. But and there's also another cruelty when he hooks up with the homeless man whose name is Joe. I mean, homelessness is a huge issue in the United States and a lot of other countries, obviously. And the cruelty of life on the street, of starvation, of not knowing where your next meal comes from and not And I mean, in fact, the Joe ends up in the hospital, taken by ambulance because he's diabetic and has problems related to his health. So it does deal with cruelty, and I know that may be hard. You know, I don't like to sugarcoat life. I think mm-hmm. you have to let children be aware that everything isn't happy. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this Toby does have a happy ending. I think that's important. Life doesn't always have a happy ending, but I think the point in the book is that you have to deal with tough things, you have to make tough decisions, and you have to find ways to overcome these challenges, mm-hmm. just like Toby did.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. You mentioned sharing your pain. I don't think we've ever talked about that here on the podcast. Can you expand on that a little bit? What do you mean by sharing your pain, and why do you think it's so important?
Well, at a certain point in the animal shelter, Toby's ready to give up. He's hopeless. Actually, Rosemary, the Irish setter, is also hopeless. She's been in there for a long time, doesn't have anybody interested in adopting her. And the two of them supporting each other, talking it out, giving encouragement, being realistic, but friends, just sharing worries and doubts and losing spirit. And getting uplifted because you've talked to other people, you've opened your heart to them about what you're going through, and they help you get through those rough moments. So that's what I mean about sharing, mm-hmm. sharing pain.
Yeah. I think that's an important lesson for our kids to hear, because there are a lot of kids, especially in the middle school and high school years, who are in a lot of pain. And yes. they are suffering alone, and they don't share it. And in an ideal world, they'll be able to share that pain. Well, in an ideal world, they wouldn't feel pain. But, yeah. When it happens, ideally, they'd be able to talk to their parents. But sometimes that's not possible. So we need to encourage our kids to open up to a grandfather, to an aunt or an uncle, or even a best friend, somebody that they can trust will give them the support they need.
I agree, absolutely. It's very important. And I think it's mental health, I don't want to go off on a tangent on mental health and so on, but I think that there are some stigmas attached to certain things that shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important, I mean, opening your heart and getting support from somebody who cares about you, I mean, and is really important. Mm-hmm. And I think... especially maybe, I'm showing my age here, maybe it's tougher for boys to express than it is for girls. And it's a shame, but I agree. If all you need is one person to listen, to share, and you relieve yourself of some of what's going on inside of you and maybe prevent something tragic from happening.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Hey, I wanted just to touch on one of the things I saw on your website is that you are an editorial consultant to the United Nations.
Yes.
What is that? What are you doing? That seems so cool.
Well, before I moved to Costa Rica, I lived in France and worked in Geneva, Switzerland, for Bloomberg, and made contact with a lot of organizations, institutions there. And I now work independently editing. I mean, my focus is trade. So the WTO, World Trade Organization, is one of my big things. And I edit documents, reports, annual reports, publications about trade mostly. I also do some writing for some of these institutions, but that's largely what I do. I do environment. I edit. It's editing boring documents, documents that may be boring for other people, but not for me. I actually enjoy the heck out of it. So it keeps me on my toes and keeps me very focused on being as perfect as possible when it comes to commas and language. And I think that helps my writing too. And it's fun because, writing a book is so completely different than editing a technical or other documents. So,
Yeah. So it must have been quite a change going from those type of documents and reporting to writing a fun middle grade novel.
Yeah, it was great, though. I mean, I've spent my whole career as a journalist. I chose that from when I was a child and have always done that sort of writing. And, of course, journalism is being objective and not using adjectives and adverbs and not really being as very fun. You can with feature writing. But moving into a book was such a different sort of – it opened so many avenues for me, opened up – you know, got my creative juices flowing, if you want to say. Because you can do anything you want. You're creating things, whereas in journalism, you're not creating things. It's supposed to be the truth, the whole truth, and so on. It was a big change. I didn't really think I had it in me because I'm so journalistic mm-hmm. and so, it's just so ingrained in me being a journalist that it was really fun. And I think I did okay. I also wrote a little ditty, a picture book that's going to be coming out for the children in the ages of, say, 3 to 6. Mm-hmm. And all of this has really been just fun. And again, with the big hope behind it that other people enjoy it as well. But I must say, at least for me, in a very selfish way, I've enjoyed writing these books.
That's wonderful. Hey, you know, we talk here, and before we let you go, I want to take advantage of this. Obviously, journalism has changed a lot from when you started to now. And, you know, when I was a kid, we had two newspapers here in Boston. We had three television stations. So the sources of our information were limited, other than the neighbors yelling from one porch to another. But nowadays, kids and adults are bombarded with information from all different sources. And there are times when you can look at two different news sources reporting on the same story and you would swear that they're talking about two completely different incidents. What advice can you give to families that they can share with their kids to help their kids learn how to discern what sources of information can be trusted as opposed to some that you should kind of take with a grain of or a pound of salt?
Wow. That is a really great question. And the word you used, bombarded, is spot on. I mean, I had to deal with this with my children coming to me saying, oh, the internet said this. Mm-hmm. And my first reaction was always, what was the source in the internet? How, quote unquote, legitimate was it? And that for me is the first thing. Is it coming from some, you know, a blogger who's unknown? Not that bloggers don't know what they're mm-hmm. talking about, but I mean, I my first piece of advice would be to look at what you consider the source. Is the source of the information legitimate? But obviously we all have, just say politically, different mm-hmm. views on what's legitimate and not. But I mean, I don't know if I can even really answer your question very well, because I mean, again, I think that the smart thing would be to say, okay, this is what this source said. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about the logic of it. Does it make sense? And where are they citing their information from? But I think it would be a great thing for parents to be able to sit down and have the time to have that sort of discussion with their child. But the internet has just, it's a wonderful thing and it's a terrible thing. Mm-hmm. And who knows what to believe anymore? It's mm-hmm. a very difficult world we live in mm-hmm. because there's just so much coming at us from all sides.
Yeah.
Very frankly, I mean, if I were 18 or 20 years old and having to decide my career, it wouldn't be journalism. Mm-hmm. And as much as I've loved my career, I just don't understand what journalism is anymore. Anybody can be a journalist, it seems. It's just moved into, I guess I'm an old-fashioned print journalist, and how journalism has evolved is sort of, I don't want to say too newfangled. Uh-huh. it's just anybody can be a journalist. Anybody can put something out there, claim it to be a fact, and claim it to be journalism. Is it really? I mean, I look, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Christian Science Monitor. I look at some of these really fine, what I consider fine examples of journalism in the United States, and those would be my go-tos. But there's just so much coming from everywhere. And politically, people may say, oh, the New York Times isn't the kind of newspaper that I want to use as my main source of information. And they choose something else mm-hmm. that completely contradicts what the New York Times says. So what do you do?
Yeah.
Well, sounds like a book topic.
Well, yeah, but you know, and it goes back to what we started talking about at the beginning of our conversation. It's just when we take the time to talk and read with our kids, and then talk about what we're reading, there's a much more likely chance that your kids, when they're in high school, when they're confronted with conflicting news reports, much better chance for them to come to you and go, "Hey, what do you think's going on here? I hear this from this source and that from that source, and my friend said this, and I don't know who to believe." Mm-hmm. And we want our kids to come to us and have those conversations.
Absolutely. And I agree, if you ingrain that, if you start that when they're younger, that they'll feel that closeness and that ability to ask you for your input, because parents do have some valuable input for their kids and even their teenagers, just regardless of what a lot of those teenagers may think. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But yeah, I agree with that. So.
Yeah. Jennifer, tell everybody, please, where they can go to find out more about Toby's Tales and find out more about you and your fascinating career.
Well, my website is jenniferfriedmanbooks.com. So you can basically get links to everything. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, all the usual suspects. So yeah, take a look at my website and you can learn about more about Toby's Tales there, obviously also on Amazon. And I'll keep you up to date on the coming publication of my picture book, as well as how my work on the sequel is going. And I appreciate interest and interaction. Anybody who wants to shoot me a message, I will react to everybody.
Awesome. We've had a wonderful time speaking to the author of Toby's Tale, great middle grade novel, from our guest, Jennifer Friedman. Hey,
thank
Jennifer,
so
thanks so much.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Jed.
Please be sure to join us for the next episode of the Reading With Your Kids podcast. Our guest will be Mark Bellow. He'll be here to celebrate Happy Jack, Sad Jack, a bullying story. That's the next episode of the podcast. I want to thank the folks who made today's show so wonderful. Chris, I want to start by thanking our guest, Jennifer Friedman. Please be sure to check out Toby's Tale. Also want to thank my team, Fatima Khan, Rory Grady, Nicole Bell Castro, Mirabella Q. I want to thank my beautiful wife for all the support she gives me. Most of all, we all want to thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. And as always, thank you so very much for taking the time to make the world a better place by reading with your kids. I'll be looking to you in the next edition of the Reading with Your Kids podcast.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller. Find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.